Welcome back to Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, my next guest has written a new book called Unwanted Advances, Sexual Paranoia Comes to Campus. Laura Kipnis is a professor at Northwestern University, and she knows the issue firsthand after writing a piece in an academic journal questioning the university's new rules on professor-student dating. The piece argued that university rules and regulations were actually anti-feminist, reinforcing stereotypes and that female students couldn't make choices or needed protection. But some in the student body didn't see it that way, and they protested Kipnis and her article. Not just the old-fashioned protest signs on the quad, nope. A campaign of sorts was mounted to remove her from her job, to shame her on social media, and complain that she created a hostile learning environment. All of that over an essay. And Kipnis is not alone. Through her journey, she uncovered more and more cases of a new sexual reality on college campuses, one where the federal government, Title IX, has run amok with new standards and guidelines that were designed to take on sexual assault on campus, but may have missed the mark and created a new sex-negative culture where students are not given the right to make choices, but instead live in a sexual nanny state. Laura Kipnis currently lives in New York City, but she's back in town for the Chicago Humanities Festival, and she's my guest tonight. Laura, thanks for being here.
Hi, Justin. Thanks for having me.
All right. So this is a great book. I appreciate you writing this. And I have to ask the question. I mean, it's a book that's about feminism. It's about government regulation. It's about college campuses and how they sort of play out today. But what was it that really pushed you into commenting on this in the first place with the article? What was it that really moved you to get involved in this conversation?
Well, I stumbled into all of this kind of haplessly. I was asked to write an essay for this journal, The Chronicle of Higher Education, which I thought only professors and deans and people like that read. I certainly didn't think students read it. And I was asked to write about sexual politics on campus. And I started thinking about this notice that had been sent around to all of us about a year before that, prohibiting professors and students dating. And I want to make clear, it's not that I am endorsing professors and students dating.
Right.
I'm not pro that sort of relationship. But look around any college campus around the country, and you will find dozens of couples that started out as professor-student. In my own department, there are at least two married couples who started out in professor-student relationships, or professors and former students, let me say. So it's, you know, this was very much an accepted thing. And so to have this new regulation that suddenly criminalizes something that had been taken for granted for so long seemed kind of hysterical to me. And so as I was thinking about the situation, I started out somewhat in a somewhat mocking tone about these new regulations and this new layer of regulation that's meant to protect students, particularly women
Right.
students, and I think is actually having the opposite effect because it's treating women, it infantilizes students, and it treats women as though we're not capable of making choices. You know, people over the age of consent, I think, should be able to consent to what they want to consent to. So I wrote a kind of, you know, somewhat ironical article pointing out some of those things and talking about a situation on our own campus that was ongoing about a professor that had been accused of sexual misconduct. And so the next thing I knew, students were staging a protest march.
It really is, when you think about what, you know, because the idea of professor-student dating, I mean, I think everybody who listens to this will go, yeah, it's probably not a good idea. But there's something on college campuses where you really have to balance letting students make their own choices and be adults, because that's the idea of a college campus. You're getting ready for adulthood. And at the same time, provide protections for the kids in them, the ones that they're still kids. I mean, it's such a complicated issue. And it is interesting that the universities, not just Northwestern, but others as well, are siding on regulation protections and taking away choice.
Well, for all sorts of reasons. I mean, they're trying to cover themselves for sure. And, you know, as everyone knows, there is an issue with sexual assault on campuses, but that's between undergrads and undergrads who, you know, get drunk on weekends and, you know, all sorts of stuff goes on. So there's a problem with the issue of consent and what's consensual, particularly when people have been drinking. But the sort of way these regulations radiate out into all spheres, I mean, sure, I would agree with you that a person in a position of grading power over someone shouldn't be dating that person.
Right.
But if that's not the case, I think that's what's happened as I started thinking about all of this more, is that there's a real shift in the sexual culture from the time that I was in school to the point that I think sex itself is seen as harmful. So situations that, as I was growing up, seemed to be kind of the norm, like, you know, maybe, you know, to use this example, professors and students dating, is now seen as like a priori traumatizing, that the professors are predators and the students are the prey. And so there's this kind of melodramatic framing of these situations. It's no longer in the realm of sort of, you know, human erotics and, you know, the kind of dumb crushes that people have or romantic foibles or whatever. All of a sudden, we're in this world that's full of, you know, predators and their prey. So like I said, as I was writing this article, I started thinking, and the article ended up getting using the term melodrama a lot. So to see things, you know, there are villains and there are victims and it's all very black and white. And so that was the thing I was kind of protesting.
When I think about the story, too, and you, a lot of the book centers around the story that you wrote about in the article, which is about Professor Ludlow, a philosophy professor who was accused by two different students at two different times about sexual misconduct. And also its relationship to Title IX and the way that the government and regulations came in. You sort of start the story, and I really like this concept with this quote, "Dear colleagues" letter. We started to see in college campuses from professors and other administrators started to get more and more of these letters from administrators from, I guess, from Title IX, from wherever. It says, "Dear colleagues," and essentially more and more regulations started coming down. There was a shift at some point, maybe in the last 5 years, where this started happening.
So what happened was after the student protest, I was brought up on what are called Title IX complaints by two graduate students. And I, like you, had no idea what Title IX was. I thought it had something to do with women's sports. So it turns out the Department of Education issued what you're referencing, this mm-hmm. Dear Colleague letter, which expanded the purview of Title IX from gender equity, like for funding for women's sports, to sexual misconduct. And they sort of mandated that all schools that get federal funding have to run these sort of secret tribunals and adjudications to deal with sexual misconduct, but which can mean anything from harassment or somebody getting groped at a party in a way they don't like to rape, to forcible, mm-hmm. you know, sexual assault. And, you know, there's a lot of debate about whether those kinds of situations really should be handled on campus. I mean, part of the reason for this was there was a feeling that the criminal justice system wasn't taking this stuff seriously enough, or colleges themselves weren't, particularly
right, the police, right?
Particularly when it involves like frats or sports teams. So, you know, that something had to be done. And so Title IX, the expansion of it in 2011, following these Dear Colleague letters, was the result. But what a lot of people have come to think is that, you know, the overcorrection has gone so far that, you know, as happened to me, like the idea that a professor can be brought up on Title IX complaints
for writing an essay
goes a bit far. And what's also happening, as I started learning, and I can tell you more about that, is that in these adjudications, there's like no due process.
Why don't we do this? We'll take a break here because I want to stay on time tonight. And let's talk about that, because that's a big part of the book, is about regulation and this idea that Title IX and the federal government can come in and pretty much do whatever they like when it comes to investigations. And as you found out firsthand, in studio tonight, Laura Kipnis, who's a Northwestern University professor, film professor, and she's also the author of Unwanted Advances, Sexual Paranoia Comes to Campus. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back here on The Download. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Coffin. My guest in studio, Laura Kipnis. She's a professor at Northwestern. She's written the book Unwanted Advances, Sexual Paranoia Comes to Campus. We pick up in the conversation talking about Title IX, because at one point they took on the federal government, the Department of Education, Title IX, took on the idea of sexual misconduct falls under that purview. As we know, Title IX to be more about gender equity in sports.
Originally.
Yeah. It's changed. And what you found out, and it is the head scratcher of the book, the idea that you could write an essay in an academic journal and be called on Title IX complaints in front of, you know, investigator. But what you found out was that this was not it did not mirror our justice system. It does not mirror any sort of fair and equitable system that we may know as members of this society. And it also, at the same time, doesn't necessarily mean anything. at the end of the day, I mean, it's really just for them to be able to fully investigate sexual misconduct. There's a lot wrong with the system.
Well, can I just jump in? It's so much doesn't not mean anything because people are losing their jobs. Faculty are losing their jobs. Students who get caught up in these cases, which mostly means male students because this has mostly got to do with heterosexual sexual situations between undergrads, are getting kicked out of school left and right. And this may not be familiar to your listeners because nobody really knows a lot about this stuff because it's all kept confidential. And if you're caught up in one of these procedures, there's a demand that you don't talk about it. So I've kind of talked about it because I thought this stuff has to go public and people have to know.
I guess that's what I mean. When I mean, you're absolutely right. It's very serious. And a lot of what came out of this is the ability for you to become an ear for people to bend after they saw what happened and you publicly were talking about it. So many cases came in. But by pushing back on the Title IX investigation, saying, I'm going to talk about it, I'm going to write about it, I'm going to do whatever, you quickly realize that you could do those things. It's not like they're telling you don't talk about it, but at the same time, there's really nothing they can do to stop you.
Well, I was in a position to talk about it because I have tenure, thank God, at a good university, Northwestern, a research university. Somebody else who was in my position who didn't have job security and talked about their situation could likely get fired. So it depends on the institution. And so I did write about this investigation. I was kind of, summoned to this meeting. They wouldn't tell me the charges. I write about it in the book, all of the kind of, people have used the word Kafkaesque a lot, that kind of experience that it was. And so I wrote a second article called My Title IX Inquisition, right, detailing it. And then I started hearing from people all over the country who had had similar experiences and far worse than mine because there's so little due process and it's so not transparent. And so, people are summoned to some meeting, presented with a list of things they supposedly have done. They can't bring a lawyer. There are no rules to protect them. And you're often out of a job. If you don't comply, you're out of a job. If you do comply. So things that aren't even against any code, like I've heard from a lot of professors about dating a former student and there was no regulation against it and they end up losing their job. The situations between undergrads, you just often have a situation where two people are equally drunk. And I ended up also thinking there's just a lot of gender bias in these adjudications. So two people are equally drunk. The guy is charged with sexual assault if there's a complaint later, even if there was consent at the time, because you can't under the new rules, you can't consent if there has been alcohol. So that automatically criminalizes the huge percentage of undergraduate sexual activity. So part of the point is that these codes are making like a whole new criminal class on campus and people can't talk about it.
I mean, it's an interesting argument because people, a little pushback would be that with sexual assault and the way that it's played out on campuses for decades, there has been a lack of there has just been a lack of follow through from the campuses. The criminal justice system is not in support. It's really difficult for victims to come forward. The campuses have really dropped the ball. So you can understand why the federal government in the last 5 or 6 years would say, all right, we're going to take this issue on. Yeah. We're going to fix it for all the mistakes that were made by. But in your book, you argue they just went a little too far.
Look, I think that any sort of like justice system has to be governed by due process. I mean, we are supposedly still in America and there is rule of law and that's what's not happening. And so there needs to be transparency and there needs to be accountability on the part of the administrators. But there also needs to be public discussion about what is now being called sexual assault. And I think what's happened is that these rules are being expanded and stretched and made up behind closed doors, and nobody really knows about it. So if you found out what students are being charged with these days and kicked out of school over, I think you would be shocked.
In some cases, I mean, verbal coercion. Some case in the book, I mean, you even kind of talk about the idea of leering or looking mm-hmm. at different students. I mean, there are cases that go that deep into the Title IX stuff.
Illicit eye contact. Or even somebody making a joke that somebody doesn't like in an off-campus bar. I mean, I've heard more than one case like that and end up, going through some lengthy process. Or texting. I mean, there was a case I wrote about where a grad student and an undergrad, and the grad student had no supervisory relation to the undergrad student, had some sexual text messages or sexy texts, you know, whatever. Later the student complained, and there was an 8-month investigation about this. Nobody even touched anyone. These were text messages.
You know, it is, I guess, when you think about what's happening on college campuses and you think about, you know, even when it gets outside of, as you mentioned, off-campus bars, things of that nature, how much of this is a shift in society, meaning that we're seeing a different sort of understanding of what we consider to be sexual misconduct? And how much of it is just sort of, like I kind of mentioned in the beginning, this sort of sexual nanny state on campuses because they don't know how to regulate students who are learning about things that are making the wrong choices, as a lot of students do, and professors that get caught up in the mix?
Yeah, I think that campuses whose, you know, mission is to focus on education have certainly dropped the ball and are focusing on regulation instead. And the regulations, I think, are ineffectual in protecting students who need to be protected or against sexual assault. But the way to protect them, and particularly incoming freshmen who are the most vulnerable, freshman women, I think, is through education. And, you know, realistic discussions about the kind of stuff that they're going to face and the social scene and the drinking and how not to be coerced into sex you don't want to have. And I think rather than having those tough discussions, instead you have these after-the-fact adjudications and, you know, just like really dropping the, you know, hammer on, if that's the right expression, on, you know, people that have transgressed, slightly kicking them out of school. But I don't think that's making anyone safer, and it's certainly not educating students in how to deal with the realities of life and sexual situations once they're off campus, where regulators aren't standing by to, you know, hold hearings.
Laura Kipnis is a Northwestern professor who wrote the book Unwanted Advances, Sexual Paranoia Comes to Campus. She's in town for the Chicago Humanities Festival. All right, we'll take a break. We'll get the update on tonight's news, and we'll come back, and we'll continue the conversation with Laura Kipnis. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest in studio tonight, Laura Kipnis, professor of film at Northwestern University, and the author of Unwanted Advances, Sexual Paranoia Comes to Campus. She's in town for the Chicago Humanities Festival. You know, one of the things, and you can go on. There's a lot because this was a very, very public story. I mean, what happened to you writing the article for the academic journal got news coverage. What happened to the professor that you spent most of the book talking about and really getting into his Title IX case played out in the news as well. And there were protests, and you kind of mentioned in the book, which is really interesting to me, this idea of generational feminism, where a different generation, a generation before, was burning bras and saying, stay out of my life, government. Stay out of my sex. Stay out of my social life. And you're seeing on campus today students saying, come into my life. It's a very strange concept of almost contrast between generations of feminists.
Yeah, and I do want to make clear, I'm writing as a feminist. And, you know, a lot of these issues have been taken up by people on the right, and I will call myself a left-wing feminist. But, I think there is a real generational difference. You know, when I was coming of age, people were talking a lot about pleasure. They certainly were not inviting regulation from, you know, campus administrators. We were protesting that kind of paternalism. And the version of feminism that's reigning on campus is almost unrecognizable to me. And I think it's very conservative. I think it's paternalistic. And I know that sounds oxymoronic to talk about paternalist kind of feminism, but I think there's nothing emancipatory about it. And I do think that there's a way in which these different forces have collided, where the universities kind of favoring regulation and a certain kind of bureaucratic tendency on the part of this new generation of feminists, like wanting to use the power of the administration to, make more and more regulations. Yeah. I simply think it's not in women's interests.
You mentioned politics. This is fascinating because this issue, the idea of overregulation and the government stepping into social life, that this is something that is championed by the right. You see it as a big through line in the Trump administration, the Trump campaign. That and even in your case, the right came to your defense to say, yes, this is when you're even seeing with Betsy DeVos and Trump today. Talk about sort of, we need to get rid of these regulations when it comes to sexual assault. We need to really sort of figure out what it is and get our hands as a federal government out of it. I mean, it sounds a lot like the same things you're saying. How does it feel to be a left-wing feminist being sort of championed by the right?
Well, the politics of this is just incoherent to me, and I'm really still spending a lot of time trying to figure it out. So one of the things that happened was I became this kind of free speech poster child. And I had never thought of myself as, free speech was always something I took for granted. So because the supposed activism on campus seems to be far less interested in stuff like free speech than, has traditionally been the position of, left liberals, it's the libertarians who seem to be most interested in issues about speech and due process and that kind of thing. So you've got conservatives and libertarians acting like liberals, and you've got the student activists acting like authoritarians and, inviting regulations in ways that we once associated with conservatives. So regulations in terms of behavior, regulating mm-hmm. behavior. I mean, I understand conservatives, don't want to regulate the economy. So, there's just all of these different tendencies that I find at this moment incoherent.
Politically, when you think of college campuses, really at the epicenter of a lot of what when we talk about regulation, we talk about politics. The idea of safe spaces, other things that are happening on college campuses that throw the ire of a far right or a right conservative citizen. That there is this sort of idea that regulation, especially the way it plays out and the way that kids are using it, is misguided and misplaced. And that seems to be very similar to what you're saying in the blog.
Yeah, I mean, I read a very interesting article online by James Livingston, and it was about liberalism versus liberty, I guess, I'm mangling this a bit, but it's this question of what's happened to liberalism in this focus on equity on campus. And so liberty is the thing that goes out the window. So, I mean, I guess it is the conservatives and libertarians who are still interested in this notion of individual liberty. And the tendency of the activists seems to be to focus on ensuring equality by any means, even if it means tossing out individual liberties. And so that's what I got caught up in, having written an essay that people didn't like, then trying to use the power of the university against me, a professor, a left-wing feminist, to punish me for having written an essay that goes against the grain of, their particular kind of thinking.
And you talk about this as well in the book, but it's very hard to take sides on sexual assault. I mean, you're either there's no doubt about it. I mean, that's why you don't see a lot of debate around this topic.
No, and as I say throughout the book, I mean, I'm certainly in no way minimizing the seriousness of it as an issue.
And the idea that you stepping out and saying, hey, we really kind of rein this in. What is the definition of sexual assault? What we're seeing a lot of or overreaching by the government and administrators. And to have the kind of backlash that you had, where there was this sort of shutdown, we don't talk about this issue. This is not something we're not going to talk about the things that are happening. Does that surprise you?
It surprises me a lot because, again, I sound sort of like it was so good in the old days, but, like an old fogey. But, I mean, my idea of what a university culture is about is talking about things and having hard discussions about controversies and issues. And this idea that speaking about things is itself somehow injurious is not what I think the university should be about. And I think part of the issue is there's almost like a dumbing down of university life because of these new sensitivities and this idea that we're not supposed to talk about controversies or risk saying something that might, you know, ruffle someone's feelings is, again, not what I think a university should be dedicating itself to.
Laura, you kind of say this throughout the book. Are you worried about losing your job?
I feel really lucky to be employed at Northwestern. And, you know, despite having gone through this Title IX case, I don't think the university had much of a choice with that. And, I mean, there were people that got angry at me for saying that. I got called somebody accused me of, like, Stockholm syndrome. And it's not that I was defending the university, but I understand that they are caught in between all of these different forces, between the federal government and the risk of losing federal funding if they aren't seen to be, you know, keeping an eye on Title IX and the student activist population and certain faculty who would support that. But I think Northwestern is a great place. I've been employed there for many more decades than I would like to say. And I am a loyalist, you know, and would like it to keep on, you know, being a place where people can, as I have, write against the grain and have academic freedom. And, you know, I think the university supports academic freedom.
Even as we speak, I mean, there are lawsuits that are mounting. There's protests. You know, people, I mean, it's one thing to write about it. Then you double down with another article and then triple down with a book. I mean, there is this idea that, I mean, as the more and more you speak about it, the more and more it is causing a conversation, whether you like it or not. But, I mean, you probably like it. You know, how does that feel to know that around every corner there seems to be another sort of controversy waiting?
Well, as you mentioned, there have been attempts to silence me. And I don't want to sound paranoid, but there is a lawsuit. I can't talk about it, obviously. But, you know, I think there are people who are trying to use these regulatory kinds of mechanisms, or whether it's Title IX or lawsuits, to silence someone whose views that they don't like. And the thing is, it's had the opposite effect on me. It, you know, made me feel like I actually had to stand up to this. And I, you know, I'm not an activist. I'm this kind of ironic cultural critic. I never thought I would be in this position, but I found that I didn't want to be silenced.
Well, it's a fascinating book, Unwanted Advances, Sexual Paranoia Comes to Campus. The author, Laura Kipnis, is a film professor at Northwestern. Thanks so much for coming in, and thank you for being my guest.
Thanks for the great conversation.